Welcome to WeTel Talks. WeTel is a community for developers, and WeTel Talks is a live audio stream. This is a recorded episode from the live stream. We invite inspiring techies from all over the world to meet, host talks, and discuss the latest in tech. My name is Charlotte Holman, and I'm the founder of WeTel. In this episode, we meet Monica Orski, CTO of Juppel. Monica has been the chair of Mensa in Sweden. She has written a book called The Art of Herding Cats, which is about leading very smart people. We talk about her experience leading a tech team and discuss what makes a good leader. Okay, so today with us we have Monica Orski, who is a CTO at Juppel. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So you're a woman with many talents. So you're both a chairperson of Mensa in Sweden.
I used to be.
Yeah, okay, used to be. That doesn't matter. A little detail. You have written a book that is called The Art of Herding Cats. You are also a consultant and you do lectures.
Yes. Well, basically I'm your average techie little old lady. Started out with an engineering degree in computer science. Well, I did a few things on the side of that too. I worked as a developer, I worked in operations, I've been doing loads of stuff, loads of architecture, moved into more high-level things, but try to keep in touch with the technology. And right now, well, I still have my own consultancy, mostly for lectures, but also the occasional other thing. And I'm CTO at a small fintech startup here in Stockholm, one that I strongly recommend.
Yeah, that's amazing. And first of all, how long have you been programming for?
Well, depends on what you mean. I started out as a computer science student in 1989. I had my first full-time in the computer industry work from 1994. Yes, I'm horribly old.
And, young.
And well, I'm not programming very much anymore these past few years. I would honestly say I am no longer a very good developer because I haven't really been an active developer for quite a long time. But I still do the occasional small bit of codes here and there. Also now I'm more doing architecture and overall stuff and coordinations and getting teams to work together and planning. All the boring stuff that actually is quite interesting once you get into it.
Yeah, so can you first tell us a bit about your role at Juppel and what they do, or you
okay.
do?
So, well, what do I do all day? That's a trick question. So I'm the CTO, which actually means I'm the team lead for a small tech team, the development and operations. We're not out there in live operations yet, but we hope to be so next year, so it's really approaching. Juppel is a fintech company that is aimed to solve one of the social problems around housing issues in Sweden, to help young people getting into the housing market, in short.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, we are more or less constantly looking for developers. So if you are really into functional programming and want to work for a small company that will do some good stuff and hopefully also make money for the company, of course, but also have a social impact, drop me an email.
Yes, no, match on WeTel. Maybe we have a new customer here. And how big is the tech team?
Well, the tech team is currently 5 people, so it's a small team.
Mm-hmm. And what technologies do you use?
Programming in Clojure and Clojure Script. Datomic for database, operations on AWS. So it's a lots of Amazon stuff in there, using Terraform to build, and the usual thing you expect. We use GitHub. We use Slack to talk to the team, and so on.
Mm. And how did you get involved in Mensa? We were talking before. I think it's so cool.
Well, it's nice. I think you should. If you think it's cool, just join us. Don't resist. Just join us. Okay, so I actually joined Mensa when I was still quite young. I was a student at KTH, the Stockholm Institute of Technology at that time. It was in 91, so it's actually been 30 years now. Unfortunately, I don't know the exact date. I don't remember the exact date, and I didn't write it down anywhere.
That's okay.
So I can't. No, but I would have liked to kind of pin the 30-year day of joining Mensa, but I don't know the exact date. But it's about 30 years, and I joined. At that point, Mensa in Sweden was very small. It had less than 300 members in all of Sweden, most of them here in Stockholm. I think I was mostly curious to do an IQ test, and this was a cheap way to do an IQ test, and it looked kind of fun to do one. So I did.
Mm.
And then with the result, I got an invitation to join Mensa, and I thought that, well, why not? It can't be worth it to join for 1 year and see what it's like. And well, I guess I kind of stayed, and I started volunteering, and I've been volunteering for, well, not every single one of those 30 years, but definitely most of them in different positions within the organization. One thing leads to the other. That's one of the things I write about in my book in Swedish. That the development within Mensa. That if you start volunteering, there's a tendency that you will keep volunteering. And for me, that led to me being chairperson of Mensa Sweden for 4 years, from 2015 to 2019, which was great experience. It's the kind of thing that, oh, that was so fun, and I never ever want to do anything like it again.
And then you wrote a book about it.
And I wrote a book about it.
Yeah.
It's not the only book I've written, but it's the only book about management that I've written.
Mm. Yeah, and we're going to talk about the book, but first I am so curious about Mensa. What do you guys talk about? We were talking a bit previously before this talk, but I want to... Yeah, so everyone can hear what you guys do.
No, I mean, it's Mensa is basically three things. It's a society for finding intelligence, identifying intelligence, which means we do the testing provide people tests to actually check their own intelligence if you want to. We have the social aspect of finding intelligence that in Sweden is mostly towards schools and schooling. It's called the Gifted Children Program. And every school that needs information about how to handle gifted children can contact the Mensa Gifted Children Program and ask for someone, for a volunteer, as always in Mensa, all volunteers, for a volunteer to come and give them a talk about giftedness and gifted children. So that's a very important part. The second part of Mensa is to further intelligence research. And within Mensa Sweden, we have joined forces with our friends and neighbors in Denmark, Norway, and Finland to create the Nordic Mensa Fund that helps fund intelligence research. That is something I really want to stress, as I'm one of the trustees of this fund, and we're out there, we have our website at nordicmensafund.org, that I definitely, if you're a researcher into anything that has some connection with intelligence, well, visit that site. And then there's the social aspect of Mensa, to be a social club, to bring people together. And it's very interesting, as a social club, because the only thing the people in there have in common is a high IQ, which means you basically have nothing in common at the start. And that's great, Because there is no set topic that this is like, you know, you join a club for people who like a certain kind of books, or a club for people who like dogs, or whatever. It can be great, but there's always the set topic of this is kind of what it is about. There's no set topic in Mensa, which makes the social aspect of Mensa so wonderful. That people get together and do whatever they want and talk about whatever, and conversations can really reach out. I mentioned before that, I still remember that one such conversation that was about creating artificial meat. The conversation started with someone had read an article about how artificial meat could now be created, and you could actually have meat without killing an animal. So it's a discussion started out there, you know, ethical aspects of eating meat will change if this is the meat that is used. And then someone came up with, but now think about this and how modern science can combine genetics. Maybe the best beef we will ever have is actually a combination of dolphin and mammoth. And of course there are no mammoths, and we won't have to kill any dolphins. We'll just make this, and so on. And the conversation got on from there. So that's the kind of conversation you can have with people you hardly know at all. And I think that is quite great.
Yeah, that sounds so much fun.
It is fun. Come join
us. I want to join.
Come join us.
But so do you feel like, because you said that usually you don't have maybe other interests in common, but do you still feel like you click with the people at Mensa in another way that you would do with anyone else?
Well, let me put it like this. Mensa Sweden has around 7,000 members today. Most of them, of course, I don't know personally. That's quite obvious. Of the people I do know, some are very close friends that I clicked with very much. Some are very nice acquaintances, and of course a few people, I don't like them and they don't like me, and that's perfectly fine, because that's what happens with people.
Like any society.
Yeah, like anywhere.
And are there some common factors? I would of course ask, are there many developers in Mensa?
Well, I don't really know, because I have no statistics for who is in Mensa, other than gender and age. We have fairly set statistics for that and where people live, but nothing more than that. So I don't have any real statistics, but yes, I would say that there are quite a few developers. It seems that somehow, if for the past maybe 30 years, if you know that your brain's functioning quite okay, and you like logic, and you like kind of solving puzzles and solving logical problems, loads of those people become developers, because of course it's a way of using that talent in your work. And let's face it, it's also a good way to know that you will have work, you will have paid work. That's been the case for 30 years now, that being a developer is a good, I wouldn't say a career option, because it's not really about making a career, but it's a very good option for making sure you make a living, hopefully doing something that you like, or at least reasonably like. So I'd say yes, we do have loads of developers in Mensa, and I have also met loads of developers that I would guess definitely could be in Mensa if they wanted to.
Cool, and now we're going to talk a bit about your book, The Art of Herding Cats. How did you come up with this book?
Yeah, well, first for the title, I cannot take credit for the title, not really, because it's been a saying in Mensa for many years. I think I heard it first time back in the 90s, that leading Mensans is like herding cats, meaning it's totally impossible, and you just have to accept that it's totally impossible. Although I sometimes have heard it said like, leading Mensans is like herding cats. The only thing you can do is bring food. which is actually true, which leads to one of the ways I have found here is to use leadership by sugar. Bring food. Bring sweets.
Have a carrot.
bring sweets. That works. That works. But seriously, so the It is definitely a challenge to lead people who always want to think for themselves and who should think for themselves, because that's kind of a point here. Everyone's smart, everyone should think for themselves. In Mensa, we also add the aspect that basically everything is done by volunteers. Yes, we do pay for a few services, mostly outside the society, things that are needed, but mostly everything is done by volunteers. So the whole board is all volunteers. The GCP people I talked about earlier, all volunteers. Mm. The people who make our website, volunteers. The proctors who do the intelligence test for Mensa, all volunteers. Yes, of course, there is a psychologist in there who will actually score the test, but the people in the room, the people you meet when you come to a Mensa test, are all volunteers, volunteer proctors. So it's all done by volunteers, and that means that if you're in charge of making this work, you have to make all those people want to do it. Not just make them do it. You can't make them do it. You have to make them want to do it. And to me, that means you very quickly realize, I can't really make them want to do it. I can just make sure that everything in here, all the circumstances, are such that they will want to do it and that people will keep wanting to do it. Mm. And of course, also with volunteers, the same people will not stay in the same position forever, and that's exactly how it should be.
Can you take some example, maybe, how you make someone want to do something?
Well, as I said, the trick here is you don't really make them want to do something. You try and find the people who want to do something. And that's what part of it. Well, Mensans tend to have many ideas. And I learned very, very, very quickly that, well, I have to be horrible about this. I told people, if you have an idea and you want to do it, great. Tell us about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will try and help, and I'll try and find people that will help, and the board will try and help, and try and find people that will help if you need help. But if you have an idea that someone else should do, I'm not even interested in one word of that idea, because someone else is busy doing their own ideas. So we want doers, definitely want doers. Doers with ideas, great. Ideas without doers, not interested at all.
Mm.
So that's part of it. Another part of it, of course, is to give people room to do the things they want to do. To tell them, and giving people room is not only to say, yes, go on, that's good. That's only the start. You also have to set the boundaries for what they can do. Mm. If someone wants to help with PR, yes, you can say, yes, that's great, but you also have to tell them, and this is how we profile Mensa, and this is what you can do, and no, you can't change the logo, but you can set another color, and so on. All the details that are needed to set the boundaries. And then let people work within those boundaries. Tell them. Actually, it's a lot like when you try to harness creativity. That, well, if you give someone a piece of paper and say, write something, that usually, well, some people will, but usually that doesn't work at all. But if you give someone a piece of paper and say, hey, try writing a short story about someone who gets off the bus after work, and that something totally unexpected happens to him or her. Now, then you will probably get a short story. So you need to set boundaries that are wide enough, but also clear enough.
Mm. Yeah, because in your case, it's interesting because it's all volunteer, so you don't have the money as the carrot, really, or the weapon.
Yes, that's one, I'd say that's the main difference to leading a tech team to go over there. In leading a tech team, you need lots of the same things, of course. You need to give people tasks that are wide enough for them to want to do it, to have hopefully have reasonably fun doing it, to see that they actually accomplish something. And you need to set the clear boundaries so that they know what is to be done here.
Yeah.
It's not code something nice, it's code this part of the system, or work together with this person to improve this part of the system, or something like that. Of course, reasonably clear tasks, and then going on to the next task and so on.
Mm.
But yes, everyone, when you're managing a team of paid employees, everyone knows that, well, somewhere at the very, very end of the line, you could say, now you're going to do as I say, because that's what you paid for. If you ever do, you already lost it. Totally lost it,
I'd say.
I think
that's the last step.
I'd say you totally lost it. If you ever get there, you really, really should reconsider your career choices and why you're in that position anyway. But everyone knows it's there. I know it, and the person I talk to knows it. And that's the difference, that there is something outside of this, well, I want to make people want to do this. And of course, there's also the very practical aspect that if you pay someone, you can expect them to do something for 8 hours a day, or sometimes more, sometimes a little less, but around 40 hours a week, per week, perfectly reasonable. Volunteer work, of course, you can't expect that amount of work, ever.
So do you then agree maybe on some work, so you know what's expected, at least?
Yes, that should be the case professionally as well as in volunteer work, to agree on what is an expected level here, what can we do. And as always, that will change over time, that will change with what people want to do, what they can do, and life happens, that we all know. We have definitely seen good volunteers that send an email that, sorry, something happened, I just need to back off now, I need to get out of this because I need the time for something else, for family problems or whatever. And that's perfectly fine. So that I think is also an important rule in handling volunteers, that it's always okay to say, sorry, I can't do this anymore. And you don't have to explain. You're welcome to tell me if you want to tell me, but you don't have to explain. You only have to say, sorry, I can't. What is never okay is to disappear. To not say sorry, I can't, and then not do it.
The classic ghosting.
Yes. So that, and it's very important to set that from the start, that, well, it's always okay not to have the time, not to have the energy, and life happens to all of us.
Mm.
That's fine. It's not okay not to tell.
Mm. Very interesting. And so if we talk about that we have a paid business and we are leading a tech team, we can assume that these are above average in intelligence and maybe similar to these cats that you are talking about.
Yes.
Like, what are the main pros and cons that you have found, if you can say it like that? Or like, what are the challenges and what are the advantages?
Well, it's great to work with people who like to think. That's a very good thing. And of course, it's always, well, when we're talking tech industry, whether it's developers or architects or testers or whatever, of course, basically we pay people to think. We definitely want them to think. So yes, we don't only want smart people, we want people to bring their brain to work also, to really, because that's the main thing. And that's great. Of course, that also means that there is always work in communications. Well, it is with everyone, but sometimes even more here, to make people work together, because you still need the team, and you still need all the ideas, and you still need the boundaries of, well, what are we actually doing here, and what are we doing here right now? I think that's a challenge regardless of who you work with, but if you want people to bring you their brain to work, and we always do, It means you need to be even more clear about the boundaries here and what's going on.
Mm. So maybe set goals and vision and deadlines.
Of course, vision is probably good, but I'm honestly not very much of a vision person. What do we have? What tasks do we have at hand? How can we divide those into tasks that can be handled? How can we make time estimates? Making time estimates is always horribly difficult, and you start out, but yeah, I multiply by 3. You know, you say multiple by pi, but you know, by 3, and then you learn that, well, yes, but this guy, he's quite fast with developing, but he's also needed to help someone else with a task, and then someone else with another task, because he's the most experienced one in the team. So we need to figure that, well, his time, half of it, will actually be used in things that are not assigned to primarily to him. And that's perfectly okay. That's the way it's supposed to be. But the time frames need to be set for him working half of his hours on tasks that are not primarily his.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. So we always need to do that. We always need to find those way to calculate something good.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, definitely clear tasks, clear milestones, iterative works, of course, agile, yes, but real agile, not agile meaning we do whatever and see where we end up, as it unfortunately sometimes seems to be understood. But real agile meaning that yes, we do something, and then we reassess our goals for the next step. And after that, we reassess our goals again for the next step, and so on.
Mm. And what are some common mistakes you think that leaders does when they lead developers, for example?
Well, I think one mistake that I'm very much working at not to make myself is to assume you know more of the technology than you do. I don't. I'm not a Clojure programmer. I'm working with people working in Clojure. Yes, I've learned some basics, but I'm not a Clojure programmer. I should not be into the code and tell people how to do things. It's even harder when you have the basic knowledge sometimes. I've been doing solutions architecture for a long time, but in my current role, I'm not the main architect. Someone else is. And I have to step back and say, no, he's the one who sets the architecture. Doesn't really matter if I think that would be the best way to do it or not.
Mm.
It will work, and he's the architect.
Mm. To drop the role as the, what do you say, the craftsman.
Yeah.
And
so
become more of a leader.
A bit of that. And of course also to step back and see what people need, and what people need will of course be different for different people. Try and learn what they need, try and keep learning what they need. Try and give loads of information, but not overload people with information. Because in my experience, long experience from the business is that, well, when people tell you they lack information, well, sometimes, of course, it's true, but in 90% of the cases, it really means they lack clear management. Because if you don't, which makes perfect sense, if you don't have management that sets the boundaries for what you're supposed to do, then you have to find them yourself. And of course, smart people will try to find them themselves by getting more and more information about the overall thing. And why I'd say that, why, of course, you need to know what you're developing. You need to know the overall goals. If you feel that you need all the details of what everyone within the company is doing, then you're not getting the management you deserve to get to be able to do your work.
Mm. And what defines a good and a bad leader, do you think?
Ooh, that's a very, very interesting trick question. I'd say, well, they always say that people leave bad leadership. People join companies but leave leaders. So that's, of course, one good way of spotting bad leadership, where too many people start leaving, and people start walking out the door.
What is the reason usually for that, you think?
Oh, that can be loads of reasons. Actually, some years ago, I used to work with this really, really good project manager who at some point said with this slight sigh that, well, I've realized that if I come into a company and I learn the first name of the five people I will work with mostly, I get there on time for meetings, and I don't abuse anyone, I'm already better than half the management they ever had. And that's quite scary, because I think he's probably right.
Where was that?
He's probably right. So of course, there are many ways of doing things wrong. There are very many ways of doing things wrong. But I do believe that if you try and treat people as people, not as pawns, then you're already coming quite a long way. And of course, stay polite, be on time, apologize when you can't be on time. I mean, come on, that's 10-year-old stuff. Everyone should know that. But not everyone does, it seems.
Do you have anyone, have you had any boss or something that you have looked up to?
Yes, I've met loads of people in the industry that I definitely look up to. That I think have been very, very good.
What did they do?
Good organizers, good at really seeing the people they work with and interacting in good ways. Finding something I'm definitely working at, because I know I'm not naturally good at it, is to find the level of response that everyone needs. Some people are happy if, like you said once, that you're doing fine, and then they know that as long as you're not complaining about the work, you're happy, and they're happy, and they don't want to hear anything more about it, because that's just as usual. And some people actually need the reassurance, or whatever I should call it, the validation. More recurringly, some people need you to actually tell them, if not every week, at least every month, that hey, you're still doing great, this is good. And to find that, to be able to feel it, that's to me that's a bit of a challenge. I'm working at it, to find it, and also of course to remember to keep telling people when they're doing a good job.
We try to have after work once a month, and I think we're quite a happy gang. We're WeTown, we're 12 now, and I think we always are quite like positive, but of course there are challenges all the time. I became CEO 1 year ago, so it has been a ride, and it's always a balance, like between like, am I too nice? Or should I be, or am I too not nice, too evil as a boss? And I always think it's like a good balance to be like, and how would you know if you are a CEO, for example? Maybe you don't have anyone to talk to about, because I don't have a boss. Yeah. How would I know? Of course, I can always ask everyone, like, what do you think about me? But they will not always be like there to say like, things like, how would you know if you are too nice or too evil? I don't know the exact word.
Yeah, you need to find that, and you need to find the people to talk to, the people who might not only be within your own organization. Of course, as a CTO, I will talk with my CEO and get feedback there, and we'll, of course, so I'm more in the middle there. But I know, well, from my Mensa experience, something I very quickly learned was how important it was to be in contact with chairs of other national Mensas. People who shared the kind of challenges.
Mm.
And also, of course, there will be things that you can't discuss even with your board as a chairperson.
Mm.
So you need someone else to talk to.
No, definitely.
And of course,
same here.
And of course,
I have a board and it's like I could not come up to them and say everything that I have on my mind. That would be crazy.
No, of course you couldn't. And of course, yes, you can kind of let off steam by talking to your friends, and that's good. But it's quite probable that your friends can sympathize but not really understand the situation.
Mm. Definitely.
So you need to find people that are doing more or less the same thing at more or less the same level and interact and
maybe
create networks.
That's great, because actually
that's my one tip. Networking with other CEOs.
Other CEOs.
Yeah. You need other CEOs of reasonably small companies and
Yeah, we're quite lucky. We sit at Norrsken and there's a lot of startups here, so of course I know a lot of other CEOs, and I find that a great tip, because you also notice that a lot of people, you think it's only you that have this problem, then you notice that all the companies had the exact same journey and had the exact same problems, and that's a great advice.
So that's also a tip from my Mensa experience, that the four Nordic Mensas have close cooperations and the four chair people meet up once a year. Well, the poor people who are now in charge, of course, have not been able to do this for 2 years, but otherwise we've been doing this. So you meet up and yes, of course, you discuss some business that are kind of business that you will report back, but you also make sure that you have a session that you just sit down and talk, and you say at the start that nothing here will ever leave this room. This is just between us. And then you can actually vent and get sometimes very good advice. And sometimes you just need to hear someone say, yeah, I've been through that. That was really shitty.
But we
got through.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, great. And now we're going to have a couple of other questions, because I had development team. And, you know, sometimes do you think that developers overthink problem sometimes, because a lot of I am a developer myself, so I know why they do this. But do you sometimes feel, and other leaders that are not developers maybe, always complain, why is it taking so long? Who do you think is right?
Everyone is.
In their own little way.
In a short way. Because development is a craft, yes. But it's also a bit inexact. It's always you kind of need to feel your way forward. So it's not, if a senior craftsman making, I don't know, a table can tell you that, yes, I can make a table in 1 week if you want this size and so on and so on. A developer can't really do that. They can tell you, will it take around a week or around a month? But they can't really give you that really exact time estimate. And you need to leave slack for that, of course. Then there is the optimization that becomes sub-optimization. That is a common problem, and I think the key to try and avoid it is to know it will happen. It happens to everyone, even the really senior ones, and to try and use teamwork to avoid it, to try and make people go for doing things together. Not, and I don't mean they should always be mob programming or something. I mean, some people really like that and it's fine, but it's usually you don't want the full mob the whole time. Sometimes you work together, sometimes each one is doing his or her stuff. But you do need to work together enough to be able to spot that, and you definitely need to be able to talk about it, to talk about things like that. Something that we do at Jupol tech team that actually involving not only the tech team but also the team that kind of you will be the main users make main administrators for using the product. That so what something we do in the team that was not my idea, but that I think is a wonderful idea, is to do a small retro every week. So every week there's a team go around the team, tell what do we feel that we are not doing quite right, what do we feel that we are doing well.
We have that team every Friday.
And I think that actually works quite good. If people learn to listen to each other and to share what they're feeling, the feelings about their work, and works out.
Yeah, communication is very, crucial. I mean, there's so much that can be solved with just talking face to face, explaining how you saw on the from your side, how you looked at it, and because sometimes we have also always so many times where you just assume that someone maybe understands what you have said, for example. Turns out they didn't understand at all.
Yes.
Do you have any quick communication tips?
Just talk to people and talk some more. Actually, a good thing is to try write things down and talk to people.
So you have something to fall back at.
Yes, and it's easier. I know that, I think, yes, I will remember that. And if I write it down, I actually do. And if I don't write it down, I have that nagging feeling that there was something I should have remembered here. What was it about? All about? So that's definitely a tip.
Okay, well, this was amazing talk. It feels like I learned so much. And if you just want to say your, three quick advice to our listeners that are developers, if they one day want to become CTO, do you have any good quick advice for them? What to think about when they are herding cats?
Yes, well, first things first, I think you need to move around technology quite a lot. See different technologies, see different things, because that's how you grow, that's how you learn. You need to talk to people, of course, a lot, and you need to remember that brains want to have fun. So let your brain have fun and let the brains of others have fun, which means learning new things and doing new things continuously.
Great. Thank you so much for coming. And good luck with your project.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. WeTel Talks is created by WeTel, a coding community with thousands of developers. In our app, you can find your next career opportunity or join tech conversations. See you next time.